Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective is presented by YouTube TV. Try it free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Friday morning about 1 a.m. just after the Celtics pulled the series to 3-2 with a 13-point win here in Boston. From across the street, TD Garden, where I just left, is Tim Bontemps.
So, McMahon, we're sitting on press row at halftime today. This kid comes over and goes, "Is that Brian Windhorst? Is that really him?" I said, "Yeah, it is Brian Windhorst." He goes, "Wow, I'm bleeping, tripping my balls off right now." That was the highlight of the day today. Not anything else. It was that.
Memorial Day weekend started early.
Quite a moment.
In Boston. Joining us from Dallas, Texas, where he's just relaxing and maxing. He doesn't care about this playoff series. Everything's going just fine. He's got a nice, cushy home stretch. Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Hey, we playing my theme song? Folks have missed it. Baddest dude in all the lane. Let me hear it.
I do care.
K-Bon has actually announced that she was glad the theme song went away. She was tired of hearing it. She told me that today, unprompted.
Haters gonna hate, just like Taylor Swift told us about. I care about this series because I need to know, do I need to rearrange my travel plans for the finals? I still do not believe that I will. When Jimmy Butler tells me they're winning the next game, I still believe him. He let me down tonight, but I still believe him. But we'll see. The Celtics have managed to make a series out of this thing.
Well, Jimmy was very confident. He said several times over that they'll win the next game, which is what you'd expect. Jaylen Brown said, I think we're going to win the next two. Or he said
He said the next two games will be fun.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what he said. It was a quasi-guarantee.
Dueling guarantees. Ooh.
Right. But I'm just going to say that, being around the Heat tonight, I would say this felt like the first time they realized they don't have total control of the series. Now, I'm sure that Heat fans would snap back and go, "Well, we're up 3-2. We're going home. How could you say we don't have control?" Yeah, if you win one more game, you're going to the finals and you still have a great opportunity to do that. But I would say that the Heat now realize they're going to have to do some, make some changes and change their approach a little bit. What's happening right now, the status quo is not going to get it done. They're going to have to make some changes.
I think the biggest change they need to make is Gabe Vincent's ankle needs to heal.
Well, that's part of it. But the last two games, even with Vincent in game four, the Celtics got back to the defensive intensity that they have had when they've been at their best. And it's easy to look at the 3-point shooting. By the way, McMahon, it was funny tonight. Bontemps has been on this 40% stat since it was like 10-1. He's been on it for months. And so the Celtics are just ripping the nets on threes from the outset. He's got his story that's going to go up on ESPN.com shortly after the game, like all set up there. And it's, it mentions that they're going to 38-2 when they shoot 40%. And they get into garbage time. And they start tossing up threes, like, Peyton Pritchard and Sam Hauser are tossing up these threes and they miss. And it slips to 39.5%. And he's like, "Damn it," because, even though it, they shot 40% when it mattered, the stat actually holds.
Yeah.
And I go, 39.5, just round it to 40. You're fine. He goes, "No, you can't do that." So there must've been some other times when he didn't round it up. And then with 51 seconds left, Sam Hauser, who's the hero of Bontemps world tonight, Sam Hauser nails a 28 footer. And when that thing was in the air, We were just watching it come down. It was like in slow motion. Also, by the way, it was a 10-point game, I think, at that point. And, there was, a couple of possessions left, and had he missed it and he got the rebound and went down and scored, it would have been inside the cover line.
Yeah, line was 8.5.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that ball going in saved Bontemps' stat and also saved the cover.
Saved Bontemps and a bunch of other degenerates.
That's true.
So anyway, So they did make a bunch of threes tonight, and obviously that's a huge factor in the way they play. But what you look at in this series, after getting 128 points slapped on them in game three, the last two games, the Celtics given up 97 and 99 points.
Yeah.
And they played with so much more force the past couple games. It was apparent from basically the opening tip, both games.
And Bam Adebayo has averaged 13 points over the last three games. And he had a good third quarter tonight that boosted his numbers. But tonight he had 16. And I think he had, what did he have in the first half, Tim?
It was ugly. Did he have more turnovers than buckets in the first half? It was a bad, ugly first half for him.
They're crowding him.
A lot like the Celtics, when Bam Adebayo is playing really well in offense, it's a game changer. You know, Al Horford and Bam Adebayo are such critical pieces. Obviously, they're both great players of their teams, but when they're playing well offensively, it really totally changes the dynamic for both teams. And Bam was completely out of the game when it mattered today. And the Celtics just, from the opening tip, they just played with a completely different level of force than they have really for most of the playoffs. Last two games, they had 16 turnovers, turned into 27 points in both games. They were flying around. Marcus Smart looked like the defensive player of the year again. He had probably his best game of the whole season at both ends of the court with the way he was impacting the game, even better than game six against Philly when he was probably the best player in the court in that game. The Celtics, this is what the Celtics do. When everybody counts them out, they turn around and play the other way. You know, I'm a joke with Brian since the third quarter of game four that the Heat are going to win the series in seven games. And just the most funny, fitting outcome for this screwy Celtics team that they'll get this thing right to the brink of making history. And then Jimmy Butler will snatch it away at the end.
Well, they need Jimmy the Heat need Jimmy Butler to get back to being the guy that he's been for most of the playoffs. Correct. If he's not the best player on the court, they're probably not going to win the game. And I mean, he clearly has not been in the last couple of games. And tonight was just like, he just wasn't an impactful player whatsoever in tonight's game. Obviously they got down early. But even like, how many times have the Heat, what's the stat, Wendy? I think they were 1.6-2 in games that they were down 10 plus.
They were six and two the last before. Yeah.
Before these last couple, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But they never, like, honestly, this game sucked. I mean, there was never really any doubt.
Well, I got to tell you, the first 5 minutes was the crowd was just really into it because the Celtics were giving them what they wanted. But you're right. Jimmy Butler, so his numbers don't look terrible, but he shot 9-21 in game four, which is okay. But not Jimmy's best, because efficiency is, you know, where he's, you know, can really thrive. And then tonight, you know, he scored 14 points. Now, granted,
he only got 10 shots up.
Right. Spoelstra did pull he did play in the first maybe 3 minutes of the fourth quarter and then pulled him.
He played 34 minutes and got 10 shots, 14, 5-5, worst plus minus in the game at a minus 24. I mean, I'm sure he'd be the first one to tell you he's got to be a hell of a lot better than that for the Heat to close this thing out.
Yeah, well, and Kyle Lowry and Max Strus going to combine 3-for-10 from the field and basically being both of them being complete non-factors. It's another massive, like, Miami's got to get more from Kyle, especially with Gabe Vincent being banged up. And even if Gabe Vincent's back in game six, I think we all agree he ain't going to be 100%. So, you know, they're going to need Kyle to deliver more than he did in this game when he really was just a zero for the most part.
Well, Strus is, you know, he's a role player. He may not do it every night. I mean, Duncan Robinson had 18 points and 9 assists in this game. If you're getting the double production between Strus and Duncan, it's, by the way, Duncan Robinson looks terrific. Holy Moses.
Yeah, he
looked
well.
Like a different player than he did even 4 months ago. I mean, he's putting the ball on the floor. He's distributing, he's creating. Man, I mean,
The wild thing about this game is Miami shot 51% from the field. They shot 39% from three, even though it wasn't a ton of attempts. Haywood Highsmith had 15 points and great shooting off the bench. Duncan played great off the bench. Like, they didn't overall play a bad game, but the numbers just don't reflect the way Boston played defensively. Well, they're just their four. Just it just was a totally different look team.
And it's real simple. You cannot be outscored by 21 from the three-point line, by six at the free throw line, and then have seven more turnovers and win a game. Like
the Boston pressure. I think Miami had five turnovers in the first 6 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they did take shots, they made a good percentage, but they didn't have enough shots, quite frankly. So I'm not, you know, Strus is going to go up and down. You know, Strus and Robinson are probably going to produce roughly the same on average when they're combined. If I'm the Heat, I'm more worried about Butler and Adebayo getting going, particularly Adebayo, who they're just really crowding them. They're going to have to find some space. And Bam said after the game that, you know, they'll look at the film and find ways to try to have to figure this out. And this is, you know, this is where Eric Spoelstra excels. He excels in inter-series, moves. But the other thing is, in addition to the defense being impressive, I think the Celtics, you know, now five games in, are finding some level what they have to do to deal with the Heat zone. And basically, you've got to just throw a lot of passes and you got to move faster than them. And now it would be very Boston of them to be completely lethargic in game six, but they played with such more pace that they were able to pass the ball through the Heat zone. And they were able to repeatedly get the ball to open three-point shooters, and they made them. Marcus Smart was at the end of the string of passes a number of times. He made them. Derek White was at the end of the string of passes a number of times. Derek White is having a terrific shooting series. And even Jaylen Brown, who came in 3 of 25 from three-point range, was able to hit some threes.
Despite the fact that his first one was an air ball.
Yeah, he was 3 of 25, and then his first one from like 23 feet went 21 and a half feet. It was a little bit.
Then he started knocking them down after that.
Yeah. So I feel like I respect that the Heat will go home and play better. But I think that the Celtics have rediscovered some of the rhythm that they played with for 4 months when they had the best record in the league. And I am not going to sit here and say that they're going to keep it up. But I'm here to tell you that we got a series now because Miami has now got to hit back. They are not going to be able to rest on the way that they played the first three games and think it's going to happen. They are going to have to improve their play, and not just with like playing harder and hitting some more shots. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to make some strategic moves to deal with what Boston has. And, you know, Bontemps, I recognize that, and one of the things Eric Spoelstra said is that, you know, one game doesn't drag into the other. That, he said, you know, we crushed them in game three, put up 128, beat them by 25 or whatever it was, and it didn't make any difference. We started, you know, game four and we lost. That's true. That's true. That one thing, it's not like the Heat get to carry the Celtics get to carry over the extra points to game six, but there is something that happens in playoff series sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes where there's a tipping point. I don't know if we've reached that. It very easily could be Miami pushing back, but you'd be crazy, Bontemps, to watch these last two games and not recognize the some traction that the Celtics are getting.
Well, this is why the Celtics are such a maddening team, right? Because the Celtics have the most talented team left in the playoffs, and they're clearly a more talented team than
Miami Heat. You're getting the Denver fans all up in arms. They're just sitting here listening.
Well, no, but listen, but this is the thing. The Celtics have had more talent than everybody all season. The thing about them is that they are maddeningly inconsistent. That's why they're now 11-11 at home over the past 2 years in the playoffs. And it's why they're 13-7 on the road, because they've had to win all these road games to advance because they've been so damn bad at home, to the point where their crowd here is constantly ready to boo them and thinking that they're going to implode and lose games like they did the first two games of the series when they controlled most of the games and had a bad 8-minute stretch at home in both of them and collapsed and lost because they turn on and off. The first thing Jaylen Brown said when he walked in after the game was, we played a full 48-minute game. And the Celtics just basically never do play a full 48-minute game. That's why they're in the position they're in. And it's why
they played a full 42 minute game and then they sacked them. They benched
them. Right. The
right.
They played, they packed 48 minutes worth of work into 42 minutes.
But it's like you said, it's like we talked about after game four. If there's ever going to be a team to come back from down 0-3, it's going to be a team like the Celtics, a team that has the kind of firepower that they do, that has two home games left at that point and can turn things around in their favor if they start to play well and play the way they're capable of. And we've seen over the past two games, Boston has played the way they're capable of. And by the way, the Celtics have won four straight road playoff elimination games over the past 2 years. When they have been in these situations, time and again, they have delivered. Did it in Miami last year in game seven. So I actually feel more confident. And I said, we talked about this before the game at dinner. I felt more confident about Boston winning a game six in Miami than winning today or winning game seven. Because if the game is close late at home, they're going to get tense and they're going to tighten up. And Jimmy Butler's going to have a chance to take over. So they feel super confident now. They're loose. They're feeling great. They're out in open space. They're hitting threes again. They're flying around on defense. And Saturday's going to be awfully interesting because you know that the Heat are going to bring it on Saturday. We were talking about with Fridell and Press Row. Jimmy Butler very well may play the whole game on Saturday and lay it out there, and he could have a 45-point game. But if the Celtics play the way they have the last two games, they're going to be really, really tough for Miami to beat because this is when they play like this, you know, especially when they're hitting threes, like you said, they're now 38-2 and they hit 40% of their threes. If they hit threes, they're pretty much impossible to beat.
Yeah. And, you know, the great comeback series that, of course, I covered was the 2016 finals.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two things that happened in the 2016 finals that greatly influenced the outcome. One was the Draymond Green suspension. And the other was, and this is even bigger than the Draymond suspension, was the Bogut injury. In other words, the Cavs, you know, played really, really well. They had LeBron top of his game, Kyrie playing great, but they did they needed a little bit of not intangible, but stuff that was out of their control. And, you know, watching Kyle Lowry struggle tonight and, you know, I'm not sure if I was Eric Spoelstra, I would seriously think about starting Haywood, Highsmith, which is kind of crazy to say because the guy hadn't played the entire series. Mm-hmm. He did perform very well, but if Vincent can't go or he's limited, they may have to consider going that route. And I'm just saying there's like, you know, it takes that little something to happen to, you know, that it was such a freak injury too. Like he sprained his own ankle, you know, and,
yeah.
You know, that just that those little margins can make a difference. And, you know, I'm totally cognizant as I'm saying these words that Miami could dominate on Saturday. I mean, it definitely could happen. But I mean, when you look at the formula that it would take to win, to make a comeback like this, you need certain things to take place. And one of them is probably some sort of unforeseen injury. And not that Gabe Vincent is headed for the Hall of Fame, but with where the Heat are with their guard play, with the injuries to Oladipo and Hero, they can't really afford to lose another guy, especially a guy in Gabe Vincent who was playing some of the best basketball of his career. I mean, he was shooting 58% in this series when he went down. I'm sure he'll try to play, but I don't know if he's going to be able to get it.
And I'm sure Celtics fans right now are screaming, hey, what about Malcolm Brogdon's injury? You know, the guy can't shoot the ball, has played right. fewer and fewer minutes as the series gone on. And so, yeah, you know, that's a fair point.
The difference is the Celtics have Grant Williams, who they can just play 4 minutes, and they have Derek White, who they can just play 4 minutes. Like, they're just right. This is where the Celtics' depth really comes to the fore. Like, one thing I'm sure Miami's going to do in game six is Caleb Martin's going to start for Kevin Love. I would have probably done that today in game five, but Caleb Martin has been probably Miami's second best player over the course of the series. He had another solid game tonight off the bench. I would think he's going to play for Kevin on Saturday and play a ton of minutes. And Haywood Highsmith had a nice game today. If Gabe Vincent can't go on Saturday, the Heat are going to turn to Kyle Lowry again. And Kyle Lowry just needs to play better. I mean, he's right. played great throughout these playoffs. He's had a couple duds in a row. But remember, everybody remembers how Jimmy Butler played in game six here last year to get that series mm-hmm. to a game seven in Miami. But the Heat won that game because Jimmy Butler was great and Kyle Lowry was great. Kyle had a huge game six the two of those guys carried them home. And Lowry had some huge games in these playoffs. And look, the Heat are going to need to go home, and they're going to have Jimmy play great. Because like you said, McMahon, he's really been invisible by his standards the past couple games. And they got to hit shots, and they got to hit threes. Like 9 for 23, that to me has been the biggest adjustment for Boston with the force they're playing with and the way they're getting out to the three-point line. Like if Boston's getting up 43s and holding the Heat to 24, that is exactly how the Celtics want to play. Early in the series, they were not getting up a lot of three-point attempts. And Joe Mazzulla's whole thing all year has been, you want to win the three-point attempt battle. That's the number one thing you win in today's NBA. The Celtics have gotten back to that the last couple of games, and it's completely flipped the series around in terms of how they're approaching the games.
Eric Spoelstra was asked about lineup changes after the game, and he pretended like he didn't know what a lineup was. So
I suspect there will be at least one.
He says he acted like he hadn't thought one second in his whole
not a
career.
Bit.
Right. So, but you know, he shouldn't give it away, but I'm just saying it was classic.
Pulling the plug on Lowry would be pretty extreme, but I will say
it's not pulling the plug on him. It's putting him back in the role where he was thriving, which is coming off the bench.
Okay.
Well, he also had a bad game four. He just has to play better. I mean, he didn't even play a ton of minutes today. He just wasn't good enough. He needs to be better. And the biggest thing is, like McMahon said, if Jimmy Butler's not the best player on the court, the Heat are in trouble. Like, he's got to be the best player on the court. No, he's got to be the dominant orchestrator that he's been when they're at their best. And he very well may come out and do that on Saturday. But if he doesn't do it, then you're getting into territory where they got to bomb a ton of threes and they got to have a lot of stuff to go right.
Well, he's got to be the best, and Bam at least has to be one of the top three or four.
Yeah, like, Bam's such a bellwether.
Yeah, and again, his box score line isn't great, but it's prettier than his performance tonight. Like, I know at one point he was 3 of 10. So, okay, he made some shots in the third quarter and the game was out of hand. It was a rough one for him tonight.
Yeah, he was 3 for 10 for 6 points, and then he hit scored five straight buckets in the third quarter, like you said, when they were basically down 20 and they were just trading baskets late in the third. But like, when Bam is invisible, like he's a huge swing piece for their team. When he's playing great, he are a totally different team. And when he's sort of like this and he's kind of floating around, their offense just isn't nearly the same because they don't have that many dynamic guys with the ball. And Bam's playing great, like in game two when he had 8 points, 8 rebounds, and 4 assists in the fourth quarter. Like, for as great as Jimmy was down the stretch, it was also Bam getting offensive rebounds, getting on the glass, you know, bringing the ball up, making plays. Like, he can be such a dynamic presence for them that, you know, when he's not, it just really switches how they look.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Driving without a seatbelt could cost you everything. But despite that, there are still drivers on the road who just won't buckle up. Some of those drivers will be pulled over and given expensive tickets by law enforcement. Some of those drivers not wearing their seatbelts will be involved in crashes. Some will survive, but some won't. Wearing your seatbelt could be the difference between making it home to your loved ones and not making it at all. Every day, when you get in your vehicle and decide whether to buckle up, remember, that's the single most effective way to protect your life in the event of a crash. Make it home safely to the people you care about. Don't risk it, click it, or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. I also want to say that Joe Mazzulla has acquitted himself very well designing some schemes to get back in this and motivating his players to play. If you're going to attack him, as people have, and you know, when
rightfully so.
That was quite a moment in the last round. Marcus Smart was like, it was in Philly after they won game six to stay alive. And Marcus Smart said something like, he's taken some criticism and rightfully so. It's funny. But if you're going to criticize him when the team plays flat and, you know, sort of charge him with the team not being motivated to play, well, then when they do play with incredible energy and aggression like they did in this game, then he has to be credited. It's just fair. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the, you know, they very well might lose this series. It's 150-0 in against them. But the way they've rallied behind him and the way the changes he's made, particularly he made changes to the starting lineup, may have changed the rotation to put Grant Williams in ahead of Brogdon more. Brogdon's elbow issue may have contributed to that, but his moves have worked. And so I think back from the danger zone of, you know, whatever might have been with him, I would suspect, even if they lose the series. I don't know how you feel, Bontemps, but I feel like he's had a good 3 days.
The Celtics were second in offense and second in defense this year. The last team to do that was the KD Warriors his first season. This guy did a really good job this season, and I think he's acquitted himself really well in the last couple of games. And like you said, I'm glad he's gotten some credit, because obviously there were things you could criticize about what he was doing. I also think a lot of it was his team was sleepwalking through games, which this team has done repeatedly the past 3 years with three different coaches. They're the perfect control group for, is it the coach or the players? Well, the players are doing the same thing over and over again. It's probably a lot of the players. And we've seen the last couple of games, they've definitely made some good stylistic adjustments. Joe, in particular, in game four, made some really smart tactical moves during the game. But this team has also just shown a lot more fight, and they've gotten back to being the good version of the Celtics. They're the ultimate Jekyll and Hyde team. And, you know, like, we'll see if they can do it a couple more times. But I just keep saying it, that it just feels to me destined for this to be a 5-point game with 5 minutes to go in game seven here in Boston with the Celtics leading. And are they going to hold on, or is Jimmy Butler going to steal it at the end? It just
and the
feels
Heat
like that's on the season.
And the Heat have been the much better team in close games, and the last two games haven't been close. And, you know, Tatum said after the game, by the way, Tatum had 12 points in the first, what, 6 minutes, something like that?
Yep.
6-8 minutes. And then if it turned into kind of a facilitator, I think he ended up with 11 assists.
He first time he had double-digit assists in the entire playoffs.
That's I didn't know that number. He had 11 assists and only scored 9 points the rest of the way, you know. But he was saying after the game that, you know, not something that if you watch the Celtics, you wouldn't have already identified. But, you know, they have a tendency to relax when they are. How did he phrase it, Bontemps? I want to get the
essentially he said, when we have a chance to relax and where we have an, you know, when we have an opportunity to close something out, we relax and sort of put ourselves in a box, and then we have to dig our way back, or been a hole, and then we have to dig our way back out of it again. Candace Buckner Mocock from the Washington Post essentially asked him, you guys always are in these chaotic situations, then you thrive in them. What is the case? He's like, I wish I didn't know the answer. And then he was like, you know, we just tend to put ourselves in these situations over and over again, and we have to come together as a group and dig our way out. And that is the crazy thing about the Celtic team. Like, they have been through an insane amount of stuff the past few years. I mean, they went to the conference finals in the bubble, then they get blown, you know, they have a rough year, they end up losing, get swept out of the playoffs, losing 5 games in the first round. Danny Ainge leaves, Brad Stevens leaves as coach, they bring in Ime. They had last year, they were two totally different teams, under 500 more than halfway through the season, then they win basically every game for 6 weeks, absolutely obliterate teams, then have the crazy playoff run, then Ime get suspended right before the season starts. They bring in Joe. Like, it's just been a crazy couple of years for this group all the way around. They've been through a ton of stuff, and they do really seem to thrive in, like, the most adverse of situations. And as a couple of the guys, you know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum basically said the same thing. We got down 3-0 and literally couldn't be worse getting routed in game three. So we knew it had to go up from there. And now they're really feeling confident about themselves. So going to be a fun weekend.
I mean,
we'll see how Gabe Vincent's ankle is too.
They you say they thrive in the most adverse situations. Down 2-0, having lost two games at home going into game three was a pretty damn adverse situation.
Fair. I'm not saying they always do. They got blown out at the end of the, they lost at the end. They, you know, they fell apart at the end of the Warriors series too. It's obviously not a perfect thing, but again, like Brian has mentioned this a bunch of times, to win four straight road elimination games is wild thing to do. Like, they're just a completely confounding team.
Yeah, the quote from Tatum, you can see the true character of a team when things aren't going well. We've got a room full of determined, tough guys. They've shown that since it's been 3-0, but they damn sure did not show that in game three.
No.
No, it's absolutely 100% true. You're exactly right. So, all right. There is some other business going on in the rest of the NBA.
Before we do that, though, we do have trivia. We got to get trivia.
Trivia is brought to you by YouTube TV. Try it free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. Bontemps, you're up.
And now to present today's trivia question, the whiz of the quiz, Tim Bontemps.
So I talked to Brian about this earlier, since he would have just said, I don't know the answer anyway, because this is always becomes the McMahon show. So McMahon, the Boston Celtics are now the third team that was either the it's a little wonky, but they're the third team that had the better record in the regular season that was down 3-0 to force a game six, third team ever. One was the
higher seed falling down 3-0.
The reason it's not the higher seed is because
one of those division winners back in the day.
Yes. Stats Williams found that the Washington Capitals, the basketball version in 1947, were down 3-0 to the Chicago Stags and then lost in six games. There was one other team that was down 3-0 as the higher seed, got to a game six before losing. Who was it?
I mean, the degree of difficulty here is really.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I agree with you. I didn't think it was the greatest question.
It's in recent memory. It involves the Celtics.
Miami Heat. I have no idea. I'm just guessing.
It's not the Miami Heat.
It's a mix between the elephant and the rhino. Elephino. I have no idea.
I thought you might remember the series because it wasn't that long ago. So in 2010, the Orlando Magic with Dwight Howard were playing the Boston Celtics. The KG Pierce team. Pierce is in the building tonight, game five. Very excited, courtside. Went down 0-3, wearing his shades. Told me, Nick, and Brian as we walked by him before the game, he'd be back for game seven. We'll see if there is a game.
He was guaranteeing two wins tonight.
He was being Paul Pierce. But they came back and got to game six here at the Garden. And then the Celtics closed them out. It was actually the first playoff game I ever attended. I was here for a wedding, bought a ticket, sat in the very last row, watched the game. But I thought you might remember that one since you did well in the 3-0 comebacks the other day. So there you go.
I mean, that's a tough one, really, especially after midnight. Like, come on, man. Put me in a bad spot here.
Well.
All right, I'm gonna step in and give you one.
Wow. Okay.
The Celtics over the last two postseasons have won seven elimination games over the last two postseasons. It's the second most over 2 years in NBA history. What team over the 2 year span had eight?
I'm gonna take a drive down I-45. The Clutch City. Clutch City Rockets, baby.
See, I had a better question there, Bontemps. Jackpot. The 94 and 95 Houston Rockets won eight elimination games over two postseason. Never underestimate the heart of a champion.
Can I tell you a little secret?
That was my Rudy T. I know you saw it in the chat.
I took a stroll through the Stats and Info Select channel.
You bastard. You're not supposed to be working. You're not supposed to be working tonight.
I had to prep. You should have said that.
I sold it.
It's all right. It's all right.
I'm an honest fan.
I rescind my trivia claim for being good. About times
you can. It's like sneaky Hembo. It's like sneaky Hembo and get up. If you get a few in a row, right, you got to up the degree of difficulty a little bit. So I upped the degree of difficulty a little.
Listen,
bit.
Listen, man. Yeah. We would have been here all night on that one. That's
fair. You didn't have your Chicago Stags media.
I wasn't going to ask him that one. I know. Obviously. I
know. Hey, did you guys know that Dwight Howard's team came back from a 3-0 deficit in Taiwan this year?
Oh, really?
No, I'm just kidding. I don't know what
I'm pretty sure his team actually missed the playoffs.
No wonder he's trying to recruit every NBA player to join him over there. Nobody wanted to play with Dwight when he was in the NBA, much less go to Taiwan.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Yeah, so we have some interesting things happening elsewhere in the league. These coaching searches are fascinating. There's all these jobs open, and it's like a huge, huge thing that's going on, this carousel that's raging on. And, you know, a bunch of guys are interviewing for a bunch of different jobs. Some of these teams are interviewing 4, 5, 6 guys. The Detroit Pistons have been like locked on a couple of different candidates for weeks now. They were maybe going to restart their coaching search if they had won the lottery. They had did the exact opposite. You know, Giannis doesn't have a coach. Booker and Durant don't have coaches. And B doesn't have a coach. Like, the decisions that are getting made right now are huge. And, you know, one of the things I think that is happening, one of the reasons why I think that teams are, you know, making these moves is that they're sort of forecasting that with the new rules that are coming into effect, it's going to be harder to assemble huge groups of talent, and that there's going to be more, probably, I don't know for sure, but there is a feeling in the league that there's going to be more parity, like we saw this year already without the new rules. And so if you have parity, maybe you also have parity, coaching takes on an even more important role. And so these teams are making moves and then trying to jostle position. And these are really huge, big decisions that are going to affect the next short term here that are being made here, especially in Philadelphia, Milwaukee, and Phoenix. These three teams are looking at the same candidates, essentially. Doc Rivers, a candidate in Phoenix. I guess he's probably not on the list in Philly. but it is.
Monty's probably not in Phoenix either.
I would say that's probably true. So one of the things to me here, Bontemps, is ownership. Ownership is making a big deal here because in Milwaukee, we have a brand new ownership structure. Jimmy Haslam just bought into the team, and Wes Edens, who was not the governor, took over as the governor and will serve a 5-year term. So we handed off to Haslam then, but it's a new situation there. We have a brand new ownership situation in Phoenix with Matt Ishbia. Mm-hmm. Maybe in 3 or 4 years, it'll be very clear what kind of owner he is. But right now, we're not 100% sure.
I think we've got a decent feeling on him.
Yeah, he's very not 100%
sure. Very, very, very aggressive. I think he certainly enjoys making big splashes, as you could tell by the first thing he did while that deal was being finalized and making the trade for KD.
And then cleared the firing for a coach that was one of the most successful in team history. So the ownership aspect of this is interesting. And then you also, I think, have a fascinating situation happening in Toronto right now. And the reason it's fascinating is that in talking to folks who have sort of been in touch with the Raptors recently, let me phrase it that way. The Raptors don't seem to know which direction they're going to take, whether or not they're going to focus on re-signing Fred VanVleet, extending Pascal Siakam, potentially making other roster upgrades, or whether or not they're going to maybe look to send Fred VanVleet in a sign and trade, maybe investigate moving other players, be it OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam. And I know what you're going to say is, this is what you guys were talking about at the trade deadline.
When yeah, happened. I was going to say, yes.
Yeah. Well, I think they're kind of back there. And
they've been in this holding pattern for a while, basically.
Right. Right. But I think it's affecting, you know, they've interviewed a bunch of different coaches and it's not clear which way they're going to go. And they got to probably make a decision about whether or not they're going to keep these guys together. And that is going to influence the kind of coach you hire. You know, when the Utah Jazz, for example, decided they were retrofitting their team, they said goodbye to Quinn Snyder and hired Will Hardy. But Quinn said goodbye to them because he knew it was coming, you know? So it's...
I think there are some other factors, but
okay.
Go on.
You know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. So there's about times there's some decisions coming up here that are pretty wide ranging. And there's, you know, fair amounts of rumors that are out there about which way teams are going to go. But none of these teams have made a hire yet. And so there's a bit of a freeze in the market right now as this all goes on, as the NBA playoffs are still going on.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to the thing we've said over and over again, really, since the trade deadline, and especially since the start of the playoffs, that with the league as wide open as it is right now, it means there's going to be a lot of teams that are disappointed. When there's a lot of teams that are disappointed, it means a lot of changes happen. Why we saw Phoenix, Milwaukee, Philly all change their coaches. Same with Toronto. You mentioned Toronto's roster situation. It's why there's so much uncertainty going into the summer. You know, got the Kyrie situation in Dallas. You've got the Harden situation in Philly. You got the Fred situation in Toronto. You know, what is Phoenix going to do with their roster? What's going to happen with Chris Middleton and Brook Lopez in Milwaukee? What's going to happen with the Lakers, guys? Like, you go around the league, and so many of these teams have massive decisions to make about what they're going to do. And as you said, with the added caveat of the new rules coming in a year and it being sort of the last normal season to really try to make moves to improve your team, especially if you're going to be an expensive team, it just really portends for me to be a pretty frenetic offseason across the league. And we've seen that with the way this coach stuff has played out. And, you know, obviously it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. And now I think we can add Washington into the mix too, with them hiring Michael Winger to run their team today. There's at least the possibility of them going in a different direction. They've got Kristaps Porzingis and Kyle Kuzma are going to be free agents. And then they've obviously got the giant thing sitting there is, does Bradley Beal, who, by the way, has a no trade clause, does he potentially get moved? So that's a new one that's been thrown in the mix.
Yeah, I think Washington. So I think when Michael Winger gets to and has a press conference, or he takes some questions from the media, whatever it is, that's going to be a question right up at the front. I would, you know, having known Michael for many years, I would doubt he's going to show his hand, but he obviously is potentially going to come in and make changes, as you said. And if all of a sudden there's a couple of teams that are looking to sell, it have dramatic effects across the league. We're going to watch Washington, and obviously Washington, Wes Unseld is going to remain the coach, but we don't know what else is going to remain there, because one of the things that's happened there is that they've been stuck in the mud for years now, just spinning.
They're overdue for a rebuild.
I would agree. And if you've got a team that is been stuck trying to crawl up to ninth, do you want to, and you've got $200 million already in Bradley Beal, do you want to spend a bunch more money on the team that was in, you know, they finished 11th or 12th or wherever they finished this year? And my guess is when Michael Winger interviewed, he had an idea what he wanted to do.
Right.
That's definitely another one to keep an eye on. So it's some, you know, transaction season is coming. And then, you know, the other thing that is, when if you're asking me what people are talking about in the league right now, the lottery picks that could be available.
Mm-hmm.
There was an assumption that maybe Portland would be very interested in moving its pick based on the stuff that Dame Lillard and Joe Cronin, their GM, said at the end of the regular season. Now that they've gotten to the top three, I'm not so sure it's going to be as available. But Detroit has...
Portland's pick's not available, then Dame might be.
There you go. Right. I think they're going to... I think that they would make... They might try to walk the line, which is to keep Dame and the pick and see if they can make it work, and to which I would offer them good luck.
I think Dame's made it pretty clear he's not trying to walk that line. But after three, go on.
After the lottery, Troy Weaver, the general manager of the Detroit Pistons, indicated that their pick at 5 could be available.
I wouldn't rule out 4, by the way. The Rockets have made it very, 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 very clear that they want to contend for the playoffs this season. They feel like there's a lot of young talent. They don't benefit from being bad anymore because they owe a top 4 protected pick to OKC in 2 of the next 3 years. And the year that's they don't owe the pick, it's a top 10 protected swap. So unless they're really lucky, there's no more benefit in being bad. Tillman Fertitta has promised a 3-year rebuild. The 3 years are over. You know, it's now, as they call it, phase 2. And Tillman has made it clear he feels like there's a lot of young talent on the roster. He said there's 4 or 5 potential young all-stars on the roster. I would like some clarity on exactly who those players are.
That's like the Rob Pelinka announcing the other day that we're going to keep our young core. And I'm like, point of order, who's in the young core?
Reeves, Rui. Okay. But anyways, I do think like just connecting dots, I think 4 could be available.
Okay. Certainly so we 10. Think 3, 4, 5 could be available and 10, which is your Dallas Mavericks there, McMahon.
The Dallas Mavericks. And look, real simple. Why do they tank? Because they're so stripped of assets. They needed the number 10 pick as an asset. And we've talked a lot about the pressure on them and not even necessarily coming from Luka, but just understanding the way this league operates. You can't have another year like last year and have Luka only 2 years out on his deal. You don't want to, don't dare Luka to ask out. You don't want to be in that situation. So they are absolutely
Here's the other thing that's a factor. If they want to keep Kyrie Irving, now granted, they could just offer more money.
Or more years, and which is, you know, we're saying the same thing essentially.
Right. They could just outbid.
Right.
But part of the way you might keep Kyrie is to make a deal around the draft that also, you know, helps Kyrie. Because what do they play? What was it? They were 6-9. What was their record?
5-11 with those two guys in the lineup together. I mean, remembered. They couldn't stop anybody. And honestly, they scored points with those two guys. Like there was some my turn, your turn, oops type of stuff down the stretch in close games, close losses. But they scored. I mean, Lucas said it himself late in the season. We can't stop anybody. Like that's
well.
Their
look,
problem.
I'm just saying. Like, I'm not saying that. I mean, they have potential position with Kyrie, but you know, if you want to retain Kyrie, you may want to do something there too. It's not just Luka, you know.
Right. It's not. The Mavs don't have the luxury to be patient, and they need a big bounce back year. And again, you know, this team that went to the West Finals last year. Now, Jalen Brunson had just a wee bit to do with that, but still.
I was going
to
say.
Just a wee bit. Jalen Brunson, one of the best bargains in the NBA. But they need a big bounce back year. And typically, number 10 overall picks aren't players that come in and make major impacts in terms of winning. So, look, this might be a situation where you look back in a few years, you're like, geez, man, can you believe the Mavericks traded that pick? And it's, you know, they still didn't work. The whole thing blew up. They don't even have this young player developing. But that's the situation that they're in where they have to be aggressive to get much better immediately.
Yeah. So between now and the start of free agency, we could see a lot going on. Plus, I'm going to say something else that's not being discussed, and we'll discuss a lot, is the amount of coaches who are looking for contract extensions and the amount of players who are looking for contract extensions. As a free agent class, it's not extraordinarily deep. But as a bunch of guys who can sign extensions that potentially change the fact where what you're going to do with your team, pretty fascinating. I mean,
right.
Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Anthony Davis, Giannis Antetokounmpo, all of these guys have extension situations.
Jaylen Brown,
which, you know, might get resolved because he's got Supermax. I mean, I'm probably forgetting people, but, you know, like that's the thing. Like, because, you know, in some cases you just play it out, but in some cases, if you don't extend the team may look at a trade. And then the coaches, like there's, you know, I'm not going to get into which coaches right now because I'm not looking for aggregation, but there's a number of several coaches who, you know, are near the end of their contracts who would like to be taken care of.
Well, I can think of one whose name crept into some of these other searches, but is still under contract.
I do believe Mr. Liu has 1 year left on his contract. So.
Well, and yes, it's not lost on these coaches that coaches are getting fired at a faster rate than they ever have been too. So, you know, if you're a guy sitting there with 1 year left on your deal, you can get a new deal. You know, it's certainly.
If you're going to get fired, have a few years left in your contract.
No question.
The other thing is coaches' salaries are going to spike here just because there's some markets that are, you know, desperate to make hires. And so I think we could see a spike in coaches' salaries, which will increase the pressure for guys who want extensions to get it done. So
in general, we're just seeing a lot of pressure in a lot of situations around the league. And it's with the league, again, let's go back to the same thing. With the league being this wide open and they're, you know, at this a pretty unprecedented level of parity and different teams breaking through, you know, there's, you know, I think with Denver making the finals, I want to say it's 7 or 8 of the 10. There's obviously every year there's two teams that make the finals. I think there's been 8 of those 10. I think 8 of them have been different teams. There's been basically different teams making it every year. Miami or Boston have made it a couple times. And trying to think one other team. Oh, and Golden State made it a couple times. But otherwise, Everybody's made it once. Toronto, Milwaukee, Phoenix, Boston or Miami, the Lakers. So we don't usually see that in the NBA. We're coming off a stretch where the Warriors have made it 5 years in a row. The Cavs have made it 4 years in a row. The Heat have made it 4 years in a row before that. You know, essentially, obviously, LeBron made it 8 years in a row. All this turmoil and teams going up and down, it's just a wild offseason. We didn't even mention with all that what's going to happen in Golden State with Bob Myers and with Draymond Green and Klay Thompson's another guy who is extension eligible. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on around the league.
So here we go. That's what we're going to be talking about coming up soon. But we have to get this playoff series done first, which Bon Thompson and I are off to Miami tomorrow. All right. Thank you, McMahon.
Bon Thompson, Wendy in Miami on Memorial Day weekend. Woo-wee.
And Friedel.
And Wendy's already requested that same hotel room with all the liquor in it, baby.
Nope. Not going back. All right. Thank you, McMahon. Thank you, Bon Thompson. Thank you to Jackson Agello, our producer. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.